Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Journey Radio. Our journey is a sequence of events that got us to where we are today. It's the good, the bad, the ugly. It's what we look back on to appreciate how far we've come and decide our next steps. Our journey is a testimony to others that anything is possible. Welcome to Journey Radio again. We have in front of us Isa, we have Alicia, and Bill. And they're all here to have a conversation with us and tell us exactly how they got to where they are today, their journey. I'm going to start off with Isa right here. If you can introduce yourself and everyone can follow suit. You are, what your company is, and what it does to help our community.
Thank you so much for the invite, and I love the opportunity to be here. My name is Isa Israel. I'm the CEO of U.S. Financial Alliance, LLC. We're a company based out of Mesa here in the Phoenix general area. And essentially, we are building ourselves out to be a one-stop shop for financial services for both consumers and for businesses. And I think our driving motivation is to do the right thing by the client and give the most ethical approach possible, which in our industry, integrity is very hard to come by, whether you're a massive bank or a small mom and pop. So I like to lead that as the forefront of our message.
Lovely. Alicia.
Yes. Hi, good morning. So my name is Alicia Nottaman. I'm a psychologist for a hospital in town. Primarily, my population is a specialized group of folks who are in the elderly portion of our community, so I have a lot of knowledge around that subset. I also have a very small private practice, and part of why I'm here today is actually in representation of I'm a consultant for Rodan and Field Skincare, which has turned out to be a remarkably unique way to help people, a very unexpected gift. And so it's a part of giving back and helping people change both from the inside and the out.
Hi, good morning. My name is Bill Whitmire. My company name is Whitmire Holdings, and we actually have a couple of different businesses. My number one business right now is a coffee business. It's an alternative form of coffee, and I'm also involved in the skincare business as well. Our goal as a company is to provide healthy products to the world, so we bring the treasures of the earth to the people of the world is what we like to say. And the other goal that we have is to create organizations, nonprofit organizations that help people with substance abuse in our community.
Great. You know, one thing I'm hearing in common is that you're all entrepreneurs, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And what made you say, you know what, I think I can do this on my own and do my own thing and actually help the community in the process?
Well, if I can jump in, guys, I think every serial entrepreneur more or less had the same start. Okay. You've always been an entrepreneur since you were a little kid, one way or another. So for me, as a starting point, I remember being like in fifth grade and having my class and I put together lollipops and little flip books for kids that we used to sell for a quarter. You know, and we use that to raise money for our school and different programs and activities and stuff like that. So I think it's one of those things that you have in you as a child and then you further cultivate it. And when you get into corporate America, you know, and you realize that that's being held back from you, it drives you further to want to extrapolate that and then bring across your impression of what corporate America could and should be like.
That's great. And I often think about that, but we all don't have the tenacity to do it. But that's a leading purpose.
Oh, yeah. It definitely requires a lot of tenacity,
yeah.
A lot of ambition.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be ready and willing to get rejected 99% of the time so that that 1% you actually make it through. You know, and that 1% could be something, you know, huge. You know, I can honestly and openly say I have definitely failed more than I've succeeded. And yet, here I am today.
Wow. That's amazing. What about you, Alicia?
I love that. I feel like that's definitely a huge lesson that has been so on the forefront of being a business owner. Absolutely. It's like when you're getting rejection, you know you're putting yourself out there. I will say I'm a little different. I feel like in the sense that I've always done things the hard way and I've gone against the grain. So I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I felt like I was just going to be salaried as a psychologist for whatever organization I was with. I liked it that way. My private practice I fell into, the skincare business I fell into. But what I've actually found in the skincare world, I literally got into it just to save money on my own products and to take better care of myself, lead with integrity. I figure if I'm representing the product, I will be more disciplined in using it. That was really my lazy approach to starting. And then when I got into it, it turned out to completely change my life. And I've come to find the financial freedom. I can actually work my business in the Caribbean. I can work my business on a plane. I can work my business at the coffee shop. And it's given me the ability to not feel attached to that billable hour. Mm-hmm. And it's also given me a platform for reaching people on a global scale, as opposed to just the person who's in my office. And that's probably been the biggest gift of all. But the discipline and the tenacity and the willingness to face rejection and just confrontation along the way has absolutely been a huge part of that. That's resulted in so much growth and self-development.
Wow. And I'm hearing you when you say global, because we always have our little five close friends, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then just to imagine, oh, okay, I can touch the world of billions.
Yeah.
That right there is actually something that it just sends chills up and down your spine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what's your purpose, Bill, or the reason why you became an owner, entrepreneur?
Sure. Well, having worked for corporate America, I worked in the banking business for a number of years. Being in a large organization like that, I've kind of got entrepreneurial from time to time, and it didn't go over very well sometimes. Because I kind of had my own ideas on how things had to be done and didn't always work out. So I always kind of wanted to be the one running the show. I wanted to be the CEO of the bank. Then as my careers went on, I actually worked in the addiction recovery field for a number of years and became an executive. And I really got a taste of what it's like to run an organization.
Right.
And I thought, wow, I would really like to have something to call my own one day. And that, and so with that in mind, several years later, I decided to take the leap, and I absolutely love it. I love having something to call my own and something that I feel like I can direct and help the community with.
Right. I love that. And so today we're also talking strongly on finances, because if you're financially stable and you make the right decisions, then it really helps your business or help you as a person. And so how do you help people to become financially stable?
I don't want to, you know, come off the wrong way, but I don't know if I guess I could say I'm probably the most experienced in that room because that's literally all I deal with.
Right.
Bill actually was with me in my office yesterday while I was interviewing a client. And I think that's the best way I can give you the example. Mm-hmm. This was a gentleman that was a very educated man and had a great job. Does sales and marketing for large newspaper companies and, you know, an otherwise very smart guy. Came to me because he was embarrassed to say that he was struggling financially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody goes through some trouble or turmoil in their life. And it happens once, twice, and some people happens all the time. But in his case, he was a very proud man. And, you know, it was very hard for him to open up and actually tell me the truth. So it was my job, in a way, almost to be like his psychologist, kind of, you know, for his finances. You know, I had to ask those prying questions that a lot of people refuse to admit to themselves, the truth. Now, and the reason being is the truth is hard to hear, you know. So because when you tell somebody, listen, you've failed as an adult, you know, it's not only is it a direct shot to the ego, but it's also a direct shot to their heart, because that's their life, that's their livelihood. So, you know, I think the challenge is first getting people to be willing to open up, then getting them to organize their thoughts and bring out the truth of what's actually going on. And then once you've done that, then it's our role as finance people, whether it be me trying to get you a loan or me trying to get you out of debt or fix your credit, whatever it may be. The idea is if I target you for one specific service, I'm automatically doing you a disservice. Mm. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
You know, because I'm essentially trying to force something to you. Now, as a true New Yorker, you know, that's what's bred into us, you know, even from my mom, you know, at an early age, you know, my mom used to teach me, you know, if you need to, you should be able to sell ice to an Eskimo for the price of a diamond and have him thank you for it. You know, so I have that tenacity to do that. But the proper ethical thing in my mind to do for a client is to really sit back and listen, you know, and that's what a lot of people fail to understand. You know, I go to a lot of meetings where I network with other business owners, and every single one has the same thing in common. They're trying to sell me their service, push me their idea. whether I need it or not. Mm-hmm. And what I do is the opposite of that. I listen to the client. I interpret what it is that they're telling me. I try to read between the lines of what they don't feel comfortable telling me. And then based on that, we try to create a strategy to get them from point A to point B. You know, now in some clients' cases, it might be simple. It might be just one little tiny service of fixing up a few things on their credit and their job is done. Other clients, like the gentleman I saw yesterday, he's going to require 3, 4, 5 years of me holding his hand along the way, guiding him through the steps. And that's exactly what I love to do. You know, on average, you know, I see clients typically between 3 to 6 years that are with me for one thing or another. And the idea behind it is just as I have to lead my employees and my team members and all my affiliates that we work with, it's just as important to take that approach and lead your client that same exact way. You know, it's the differentiator between the boss that has the whip versus right. the leader that leads by example. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what you have to be for your clients. You have to lead by example.
Oh, nice. Not only talk about it, but also do it.
Be about it.
Yeah. And yeah. So we were talking about the psychology of it. And so I wanted to know, like, what's the pressure, or, you know, psychologically, or what do people feel compared to when they start trying to work through debt till the end?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's so multifactorial, right? So, mm-hmm. so much of a person's attitude, beliefs, confidence around finances has a lot to do with how they grew up. So the parental attitudes, the people they grew up yeah. around, and it's so different. There's not like a 2 + 2 = 4. So for mm-hmm. example, if somebody grew up with very little resources, maybe the family couldn't afford to give them the same luxuries that another family might be able to afford. Some of those folks will grow up and be very risk averse. So they won't want to spend money. They'll want to be very, very overly conservative, to the point that it's really, really restricting and impacting their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Some people will, in those cases, by the way, it's not unusual to have hoarding and those sorts of behaviors develop mm-hmm. because everything is so treasured, just sometimes to a bit of a problematic degree, I think. And then you also have that same group of people who might actually grow up and almost spend luxuriously when they have, because I didn't get to do this when I was young. And that can sometimes, again, at the extreme, result in irresponsibility. So I'm just going to spend sometimes even beyond my means. And so it can completely, you know, direct the way and the approach that somebody takes in expending. And so much of that also boils down to the compatibility of who they surround themselves in their adult mm-hmm. life. So their romantic partner, business partner, I don't think there's anything inherently right or wrong with any particular way somebody grows and develops, although right or wrong is different than is it working for you? Is it responsible, right? In one case, we're talking about a moral compass. In another, right. we're talking about what serves your quality of life, what serves your family's quality of life. But that compatibility component is so important. And so I think a lot of those components go into place. Mm-hmm. I wrote down things like fear of security, fear of loss, yeah. fear of reliving past traumas around yes. finances, mm-hmm. fear of cleanliness even to that degree. And so that, you know, as I mentioned, can really develop into that overindulgence right. or aversion to spending.
Wow. So it can go either way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And I think it can also go to the extreme of, you mentioned ethics around finances. It can influence someone's ethics yeah. around finances. Mm-hmm. If somebody absolutely wants to make sure they're never in dire straits, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, and this is where that moral compass might come in, that can result in some really poor decisions that don't necessarily fall in line with integrity. And what happens then? We develop depression. We develop stress and anxiety. Sometimes they don't even realize that these feelings are potentially a byproduct of the choices they're making. You know, one of the interventions that I offer to patients sometimes in my office is I say, imagine, it's called an epitaph exercise. Mm-hmm. Imagine what you want people to say about you at your funeral. Imagine how you want to be remembered. And if your words are, I want to be remembered as someone with integrity, I want to be remembered as somebody who was responsible, and yet you're not living your life in line with those values every day, then it would make sense that you're experiencing feelings of anxiety, turmoil, interpersonal conflict, because you're not living in line with what matters to you. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the thoughts that came to my mind.
Right. So, Bill, would you say that you have to, when we're thinking about finances, figure out what's important to you when you're budgeting or when you're deciding to go into business or anything?
Oh, yeah. You definitely need to figure out what's important to you. And as Alicia mentioned, it has to do with what your values are. Mm-hmm. So if you can sit, I know for me, I sat down before I started my business and made a list of what my core values are. Mm-hmm. And not only did I center my business around it, but how I would budget my finances around that. And I can speak from experience from my own, just to be transparent, back in 2008 when the economy fell out. Well, I had a falling out too. And so from personal experience, I learned some hard lessons about how maybe ego, not really paying attention to where that moral compass is and thinking you have more than you really have when you're, let's say the cash flow is coming in, right? And then you take on more than you really should be. And then all of a sudden things happen and then you're left in some dire straits. So having learned some value now, hopefully no one else has to do that. So having taken some hard knocks when it was time to become an entrepreneur, I thought long and hard about that in the business planning process and in the budgeting process. And I'll say that there's a lot of helpful tools out there for business owner through SCORE. You can go on there and actually download a business plan and, for a for-profit or for a nonprofit business, which really helps in the budgeting process. And there are a lot of demands, which I didn't realize when I got into entrepreneurship, because I kind of thought, well, being an executive, I kind of know what I'm going to run into. No, I had an HR department. I had a marketing department. I didn't have to worry about that. All I had to worry about was recruiting staff and managing staff and dealing with the board of directors, right? Which
That's
is
a
enough.
Big thing. Yeah.
But all of a sudden, as an entrepreneur, I'm realized, okay, the marketing budget was the hardest for me because I'm dealing with lots of folks coming to me with lots of great ideas, with lots of great products, and I love everything. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, now I've got limited dollars. What is going to be the best way to spend my dollars to get my company's, you know, best interest put out there? And so those are very hard decisions. And I would always reflect back to what are my core values? Mm-hmm. What's my mission here? Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's definitely the way I see it.
Yeah. So have you been able to help somebody along the way through your experience?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I talk with new business owners all the time. I'm quite active in the Chamber of Commerce and some other networking groups. And so I'm able to sit down with other business owners and share my experiences with them, which also helps me as well, because when we teach something, that's when we really start to learn it.
Right. You can get to like actually experience it. And I think people relate to you a little bit more when they think that you're walking the walk, or either you experienced it and they can actually feel the emotion. I was talking about that last night, about people actually feel if you're genuine or not. Is that how you get people to go along?
100,000%. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. You have to have, no matter what you're doing, you could be a garbage man, you could be a doctor, you could be a finance geek, you could be a tech geek, you could be whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to have a passion. Mm-hmm. There has to be a driving factor. And I think, you know, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, and even if you're not, even if you're just working the corporate ladder, everybody has a why. Right. It's the quicker you can address your why and actually, instead of being afraid of it, embrace it, the better off you're going to be. And by default, the better off the people around you are going to be.
Right.
I think that Alicia touched on a very key point about the psychology in business. There's two, in my mind, there are two aspects of the psychology that are super important that very few people want to address. Mm-hmm. She brought up the first big one, which is, you know, finding that happiness, that inner joy in what it is that you're doing, right? But I think just as much she brought up fears. And the problem, I think, in the financial sector that big companies, big corporations, and big banks are all basically banking on is your fear, you know? So I think that businesses today that are growing, that are scaling, are those that have moved away from that model and are empowering people, as opposed to preying on their fears, you know? So, you know, in everything that you do, there's multiple ways to, let's say in my case, how Bill was describing, you know, challenges of marketing and challenges of getting the word out and everything else. In my case, it's all about how I'm selling, right? So if I tell you that you see those commercials, let's say with regards to the IRS, if you don't pay the IRS their tax debt, what's going to happen immediately is you're going to get arrested and you're going to None of that stuff is true. Okay. but people fall into that trap, right?
Yeah, they do.
You know, and that's that unethical thing I was talking about. You know, a lot of companies do that. Whereas, if you tell people the truth about, you know, rights that they have that they don't even know about, that people are too afraid to even ask, do I have the right to protect myself from a predatory lender, from a predatory bank? Do I have the right to protect? Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is, the answer to this is absolutely 100% yes. You know, and people don't think about that. You know, so understanding psychology, if you're going to be good at any type of sales, mm-hmm. especially in finance, mm-hmm. is critical. See, big banks, if you look at their corporate infrastructure, in their HR departments will always have at least one Alicia or a team of Alicias, okay?
And I would love to have a team of Alicias. Aww. I'm just saying. Hey. Yeah. And I would like to have this team right here, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, to come here every day. All right. Now, in my pocket.
Alicia, let me ask you this. You ever been in a situation where you're in a group of other like-minded individuals like yourself, mm-hmm. yeah. okay? And all of a sudden, somebody comes up to the group and says, okay, well, you understand this part of psychology. You understand this part of psychology. You understand that part of psychology. How do I monetize it? Right? Mm-hmm. There's two ways you can answer that question. Well, you could say, all right, let's take the aggressive, fear-driven approach, or let's take the compassionate approach. Mm-hmm. Let's listen. Let's absorb, you know, mm-hmm. information. So I treat what I do mm-hmm. very much how she would treat a patient. You know, so when you come to me for financial questions, mm-hmm. you're my patient, you're my mm-hmm. client. I have to address your specific needs. Mm-hmm. If I try to cookie cutter it to you,
yeah,
it might work, let's say 1-2 out of 10, mm-hmm. you know, but what about those other 8?
Yeah.
You know, you have to look at it from, you know, do I have a return on investment or not?
You yeah. know,
and the best way to do that mm-hmm. is to get your client to have a return on their investment. They're investing in you. Mm-hmm. And as such, if you're doing a good job, they get a great return. You know, so, you know, I think that's something that has to be, you know, spreading like wildfire in our yeah. industry. And not that many people are doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some really, really great people mm-hmm. that are doing it. Great examples are like Tony Robbins, mm-hmm. Gary Vaynerchuk. These guys are doing it,
yeah.
living it. So for me, I think they're kind of I haven't been lucky enough yet to actually meet these guys in person and, you know, say that they're my mentors, let's say, but they definitely are great role models.
They are. Sure. So I pulled out passion mm-hmm. because if you have passion, you got your why. Okay, you can handle the finances, you can handle the business, you can handle anything. So how do you pull out? Because all of you guys have customers, you have clients, you have patients, and the patients actually have to get, you know, they have to progress. So how do you get them to say, you know what, I buy into this and I can see that this is going to help my future? How do you get them to come to the point where they have the passion or the desire to actually mm-hmm. progress?
Yeah, if I might, actually, you said several things and mm-hmm. I jotted down some notes because there's so yeah. much overlapping in our industries, mm-hmm. which is so cool. Because as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, there's all these acronyms I've learned in my mm-hmm. business. One being tiny, their interest, not yours. So when mm-hmm. you're speaking of, I listen and I try to understand what is it that they need? What are they lacking in their life? And how can I help cultivate that for them mm-hmm. or empower them in a way, providing them with whatever it would take in order to achieve that in their lives? So one thing I wrote down that I think goes along with how to find passion. In fact, so one of the things that I do on my Facebook business page, as well as sometimes on my personal, is I do almost weekly live readings or live, just like brief presentations, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 10 minutes. I can be kind of verbose. Sometimes they're 10 minutes. But I do these readings because I always want to give something of value to my network. Whether you ever come to me as a client, as well, my clients aren't on my network, but as a business partner, as friend, whoever you are in my life, I want you to feel like you walked away with something of value. And so a reading I did this morning actually talked about everybody has genius. So if you tell a fish to climb a tree and that right. would be the way that you're assessing their brilliance, that fish is going to go the rest of its life thinking it's an idiot. But the fact mm-hmm. is, fish don't climb trees. There's no way we could teach a fish to climb a tree. So it's looking for that person's strength. Mm-hmm. I have people in my network who, for example, don't feel they could relate necessarily to the skincare industry that I'm in if I present the business opportunity to them, because they say, oh, Lisa, you're so extroverted. You love strangers. You love traveling the world. You love going to charity events. That's just not me. I'm introverted. And I say there's room for every single personality in this business. You could work this from home behind a computer, or you could go out into the world and do it that way. It's a matter of figuring out your genius. What do you mm-hmm. do better in this moment in history, better than anyone else in your life? I bet you there is something that we each do really, really well. Another thing that I wrote down You mentioned tenacity earlier, and tenacity is so critical. And another reading that I've done is about, and I don't know the exact statistic, but I think they say your team below you, your staff, or whoever you're trying to empower or inspire are going to duplicate about 30% of what you're doing. Right. So ask yourself, the amount that I'm doing, if someone did 30% of it, how well am I actually inspiring and modeling? Mm-hmm. And is what I'm doing going to get me to where I want to be? People want this magic pill. Well, mm-hmm. but it didn't work. It didn't work, so I gave up on it 3 days later, 3 months later, 3 years later. But the reality is you're planting seeds. And I always say, too, if you're going to touch your business 2 hours a month, well, how often is someone going to keep going to that, you know, coming to your exactly. storefront when your shingle is always up and it says closed? So those are kind sure. of some of the notes that came up for me, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember I have a beauty salon in Tucson. Divinity Beauty Bar, but I've had these amazing people come through, but the one that comes to mind is Sandra. She was from Africa. Mm-hmm. And I remember, how do I get her to really reach her potential, make more money? And yeah. she says, and I said, what is your passion? What would you like to do? She says, well, I would like to go to Africa back home, but I don't have the money. And when I go, I need to bring gifts and I need to mm-hmm. actually right. do all of these things. And I said, okay, but why don't you take a picture and you're going to put Africa right there on your station? Well, she's gone 3 times. I think when yeah. she got that passion, I was just so amazed. She went 3 times. I think when somebody saw that she was doing it, then they helped her do it.
Yeah.
And not only that, you were talking about the 30% that mm-hmm. people see you do. So she also opened up her own salon. Now, I could That's be amazing. Like, you know, you hate to see people go, especially right. when they're helping out and you have that vibe in the shop. But then that was a testimony. You know what? That's what Divinity Salon does. We build leaders. We yeah. not only have Sandra going to Africa, we have her actually building her own business. And then we also have within that Desiree Cook. She came back to us and she has a nonprofit, IMU 360, helping the youth. So that's awesome. That 30% that like reaches the 50, 75. It's mm-hmm. you're making me
planted those seeds. Look at the trees right.
I
got. Right.
And you don't see it when it's happening. It's like, why are they calling me Miss Enid or Mama Enid? I don't like that. I think it makes me feel old. But then it's like, oh, so they tell me it's a sign of respect. So I said, okay, bring it on.
Them. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's you guys are. Right. You're hitting the button consciously.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So for me, it's all of the above and mm-hmm. adding value to people's lives. You know, when I was a teacher, I taught high school and middle school. And one of the things that I did with the young people was I looked for a way to add value to yeah. them. And that's how and I worked with a lot of young people that had a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And one of the key things that I had to do was gain their trust and gain their rapport. Same thing goes with business, right? Right. And that's kind of where I learned how to do what I do in business when I was in the education field. But when I was able to gain the students' trust, then all of a sudden, hey, they're doing their homework. They're coming to school. And then I took the same skill set, if you will, mm-hmm. and brought it into the business world. And when I listen to someone that wants to get in the business world or maybe listen to a business owner that's struggling, I can figure out if I'm really listening to them, I can kind of pinpoint where their pain is and offer a solution for that. I see myself as a solution-oriented person. And a lot of times I can't see if I'm struggling, someone else has helped me in the past, right? Because right. they could see the big picture. And when I'm working with someone else, I can see the big picture and say, well, maybe you can try this or try this over here. And give them resources. And then also, you know, people that want to join my team as well. I mean, it's all about the servant leadership. I was journaling the other day and I wrote down, what are the characteristics of the servant leader? First thing I wrote down, as Isa mentioned, is being a role model.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They do what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in the office or out there making sales calls or whatever it is that you do at 7 a.m, 8 a.m, calling on other businesses, well, your people will do the same thing. But if you're not doing that, if your day starts at noon, what do you think your people will do? Right?
They're there at noon.
More like 3.
Yeah. Grab coffee. Yeah. And I'm hearing everybody saying trust. That was really key yeah. to me. And I started by looking up integrity because my personal coach, she was like, you know, I get so tired of people saying integrity is doing the right thing when nobody's listening. So I go, let me look this up. But it was like you embody this person that right. people can trust, people can follow. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hearing from all of you guys is, okay, I'm a person of integrity. How did you get there?
I think it comes a lot from trials in life. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all gone through something in our lives, you know, whether it be family, whether it be with our own health or a family member's health, whether it be, you know, struggling in our youth and growing up a certain yeah. way. So if I may, I kind of want to tie in a bunch of different things that both Alicia and Bill and you were all kind of throwing in there. So I'm going to try to do this as a
kind of
like a domino effect.
Yes.
Okay. So a while back, Alicia just mentioned that a lot of how you grow up shapes who you're going to be. Right. Now, in my case, I grew up dirt poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, like dirt poor, sleeping on the floor, dirt poor.
Wow.
When my family and I first came to the United States, I was 4 years old,
mm-hmm.
and my first memories here were sleeping on the floor, on a mattress, no blanket, no pillow, just we had nothing. And, you know, we were fortunate in that we had a lot of people in the Jewish community in New York that helped us out. And in my upbringing, it was always about, no matter what you have, whether you have a penny in your hand or you have a dollar in your hand or you have $1 million in your hand, make the most out of it, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I looked at how my parents worked day and night, literally. I mean, it was crazy. Like, I remember my dad would work like 18 hours a day, you know, when we first came here. You know, mm-hmm. he would do construction jobs during the day and work as a taxi driver by night, you know, and just come home, sleep, take a shower, change clothes, and right back out the door, you know? And I think that hardworking mm-hmm. component was what was instilled in me from a very young age. Now, that builds on who you start to become as you get older, right? When you get right. into school and you start interacting with others, now those environments start to shape who you are. And it becomes very easy to lose yourself within that. Right. So for me personally, I was, you know, the honor roll student mm-hmm. always, you know, by the time I was out of kindergarten, I spoke 3 languages, you know, I was way advanced for my age. But even with all of that, mm-hmm. you know, we still had obstacles. We still had hurdles, you know, from an educational standpoint, my scholastic achievements were phenomenal, but they could have been even more so had my parents had the resources like Alicia was mentioning, you know, but in every aspect of your life, you have a choice, mm-hmm. okay? You can either choose to allow something to define you or to use that same thing that could be defining you to fuel you, you know? So I'm going to speak for myself. I don't want to speak for anyone else, but I personally have gone through tremendous amounts of adversity, mm-hmm. Both from physical ailments mm-hmm. to injuries, to problems with health in the family. You know, I'm fortunate that I still have both of my parents, but both of my parents, even though they're young, very ill. You know, my mom suffers from congestive heart failure. My dad has really bad diabetes, you know, and those were products of their lifestyle choices. You know, my mom, you know, worked her tush off, as you can say, and so did my dad. And like my dad, you know, if you think back, you know, 30 years ago, this is before we had energy drinks, before we had Red Bull, before we had all that. The way he used to stay awake is he used to take a 2-liter Coca-Cola and use the sugar to keep himself awake while driving, mm-hmm. right? And that eventually turned into diabetes, okay? But that said, you know, for me personally, I think the defining moments that build your character, that right. build your integrity, are how you treated yourself and those around you when adversity hit, mm-hmm. right? Yes. So I had to deal with that personally from a very young age. Growing up poor was one thing. When I was a teenager, I got into football. I did football for a long time. So that teaches you dedication, discipline, teamwork, right? But beyond that, I met with very big adversity very early on. Mm-hmm. Okay. I had some very traumatic injuries at age 16. I was already having my first 2 surgeries, wow. you know, and that just led to another series of injuries after that. But along the way, you know, that reels in your character, mm-hmm. right? Because I was told at age 17 by every doctor I saw, I would never play football again. I would never do any sport again. I wouldn't be able to move my arms, you know, and sure enough, I used that as fuel. Mm-hmm. By my bed, 6 months, 7 months of recovery, I had every medical book, you know, I could think of. And I used that to fuel it. So I apply that same aggressive tenacity to everything that I do, you know, and I think that's that passion that Alicia was talking about that people see. Mm-hmm. If they take 30%, mm-hmm. right, you better be at 300% because they have to get it to 100. Right. And you can't lead that example unless mm-hmm. you're there. You
right.
know?
Right. And that's my motto. If Messina doesn't sit down, neither do you. And they go like, oh, my yeah. God, I cannot do all that.
Yeah. yeah.
But you're right.
That's what makes you a great leader, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because people mm-hmm. see you
right.
doing it. And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden, they're like, if she could do it,
right,
I could do it.
Right. You know? It's like, you know, the leader's in here and she's sweeping the hair off the floor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Everybody got to jump in and do something. And yep. yeah.
Yeah, I love what you said, too, about the integrity with yourself, because I think people forget that and mm-hmm. the importance of integrity with themselves.
Yeah.
So as you said that, what came to my mind is I do these presentations in the community. Again, another way that I give back with my business and just giving back the time is I do anxiety and stress management presentations just in like the public arena. And one of the symptoms we talk about that comes along with stress and anxiety is a difficulty separating from others. And a lot of people assume physical separation. Oh, that means the person doesn't want to leave the house. But I'm also talking about emotional and cognitive separation. In other words, who are you living your life for? Is it mm-hmm. someone else's approval? Because does somebody else know what keeps you up at night? Does somebody else know what truly all the different components of your life? And if not, then why are you allowing their opinions, preferences, etc., rule your decisions? That doesn't mean don't take in the input, but trust yourself enough to make the best decision for you, considering safety, considering responsibility, considering, again, that moral compass and how much that leads to stress. And then also with stress, integrity with self, you mentioned sickness. Well, a couple of years ago, my entire life was psychology. So, and I love being a psychologist. Just don't get me wrong. I absolutely love it. It's the most rewarding career I could ever pick for myself. I mean, I was working full time for a hospital. I had it was supposed to be a part time private practice, but it was a lot. It was probably over 20, 25 additional hours a week. I was volunteering in psychology. I was also working with nonprofits. I was teaching in the community. I look back, I'm like, how did I do all that? And then I got sick, and I thought I was sick because I was just burnt out. I thought I was just overwhelmed and stressed. But the reality is I was actually physically sick to the point where, and it was an insidious, it was heavy metals poisoning, which is very weird to catch. You know, I was fatigued. I was having memory issues. I'm like, what is wrong with me? And what that is it's kind of a slow death had I not caught it. And I remember at one pivotal point thinking, is this how I die? Mm-hmm. Is this how I die? Working my life away. Yes, I love what I do. But if you're going to do it 80 hours a week and everything about my life is that, where's the fun and where's the diversification? I don't want life to feel like an obligation. Mm-hmm. And so my business has brought in that fun and that silliness mm-hmm. and the traveling and the charity and the living my life on my terms and not feeling attached to that billable hour. And those golden handcuffs went away because now I get to be a psychologist in normal full-time hours. And I still get to do some of my nonprofit work and I still teach, but it's now again on my terms and I'm enjoying it. And I feel like I have all of that diversification that came with yeah. it. And so that now I feel like I'm living with integrity with myself mm-hmm. because I get to do everything better because I feel more energized.
Right. Because I do finance by day. So I'm like, yeah. But then it's the relief because mm-hmm. I'm thinking that's what you get when you're doing the beauty products.
Yeah.
Is I go in the shop, you know, the women are talking trash or you're just having a good time. Right, you know, right. you might be sweeping up, but it's a lot of fun. You bring in a little food in the mix and it's like, oh, some music and yeah. cartoons for the babies. You know, it's a lot of fun. And yes. that's my stress relief.
Exactly.
This right here is a stress relief. This is a lot of fun. And right. last night was photography. I was going, oh, my God, that's my new passion. That was a lot of fun. So it's like bringing in the diversity.
Absolutely.
And I think you train on diversity also,
I
right?
I do. I absolutely do. Well, and it'd be so easy for us to not have gotten into this industry if mm-hmm. we feared, how is someone in my professional arena going to see this? Because I struggle with that at first. And that's why I say I've grown so much. My skincare business has taught me more about how to do life than I think I learned anywhere else in my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm a board certified psychologist. Like, that's about as high as you could go. And I mean, I was like, life's perfect. I don't need anything more. And I had no idea yet what mm-hmm. I was missing mm-hmm. because that was the only lens that I had.
Wow.
Yeah.
That fun.
Yes, yes, yes. talking about adversity, that's what led me to do what I'm doing now. Yeah. And on a lot of different levels. You know, for me, I've had struggles with some of my health through the years. There was people that were put into my life that encouraged me to keep going. When I was an executive, one of the things I really struggled with was leadership, because you find yourself in a position where people are coming to you for guidance and your phone is ringing all the time. You're getting email messages at 2 a.m, 3 a.m. regarding a crisis because it's behavioral health. Of course, there's going to be a crisis, right? And it's up to you to make very hard decisions. I ended up getting burnt out and had to leave that profession, which I loved.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I would get back to it. And over the years, I had people put in my life that encouraged me to start taking chances, start taking risks, and start trying some things. And that's what got me to really get motivated to try and start my dream, which was to start my own business. Mm-hmm. So start going after starting a nonprofit, to go to Toastmasters, as you mentioned, to start working on my leadership skills, because I knew in some areas I was lacking and I needed to beef up those skills and communication skills to become successful. You know, part of being successful is owning your strengths and your weaknesses and finding ways to beef up those weaknesses so you can be a very well-rounded person, and being transparent with those weaknesses. So,
yeah, when you're transparent, do you find that you get the help? It's like when you open yourself up, people come, you get.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And people are so willing to help you. You know, one of the things that I find in my networking groups and like in the Chamber of Commerce, our industry, some businesses overlap, right? There's not always one game in town, right? Right. And I thought, well, you know, being a new business owner, I wasn't sure how that would work. Mm-hmm. And then I started talking with people and everyone is willing to help you. You know, if I'm transparent with people, I'll speak for myself.
Right.
If I'm transparent with people with what I'm going through and what I'm struggling with, they will help me, mm-hmm. yep. which is not when it's a little bit, when I was at ASU, I majored in the sciences. Uh-huh. The scientific community is very competitive. So if another lab was working on your same research project, you didn't share information with each other. Right. And I thought the business world was the same, and it's mm-hmm. not. People want to really want to help you. People right. want to see you be successful. Mm-hmm. So,
Can I piggyback onto something that Bill just said? So you mentioned transparency, and I love that. And I one comment I was going to add on earlier, and you just reminded me, is also just accepting responsibility and accountability. Mm-hmm. And that goes hand in hand with integrity, too. Mm-hmm. I find that in today's culture, people don't really like to apologize or just own it. When you mess up, just own it. It's okay. We all make mistakes. We all goof up. And I'll tell you, I'll speak for myself, that I will trust you 10 times harder, faster, and longer if you simply say, I goofed. I'm so sorry. Where do mm-hmm. we go from here? Then if you try to pretend it didn't happen and just brush things under the rug, because now there's that awkward tension and it's like, I don't know if I can trust this person. I don't know if that relationship is sustainable. And same goes for how people will view us, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We're all living our lives and just trying to be happy.
Right.
So let's just notice that and be okay with it, but just also speak to when, you know, transgressions happen, for example.
Right. I think that's actually a great way to weed out who you're going to actually end up working with versus all the people you actually meet.
Right.
So when stuff like what she just described happens, there's going to be two types of people. One that tries to address who's at fault.
Right.
And then one that tries to address whose responsibility it is to act and fix the problem.
Right.
So the way exactly word for word, the way she just described it. Okay. If I screwed up, I'm going to own it.
Mm-hmm.
Take pride in what I did, whether it was wrong or not. And then do everything in my power to make it right for that person that I've wronged, right? Now, if I'm not willing to do that, there's no such thing as I have character or I have integrity, because you don't. Because now you're just looking out for you, you know? But if you're going to have people like Bill and I have had the fortune of working together for a while now, for the last couple months, and he, by default, I think, is such a sweet man and such a nice person, you know, you want to pour yourself into him. You know what I mean? Like you want to be there for him and everything, because that's just how he is. He draws that out of you, you know, where you have other people. Not much. You know?
Yeah. Because me and my daughter, we have that bad juju, you know. You know, karma. It's like, oh, should we approach that person? She's like, no, I don't think so. We don't want them in our world of integrity, right? And so that's how it is. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do business with them. And that'll right. cut them off quick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't believe in pushing someone to work with you if mm-hmm. they're blatantly doing stuff that is contrary to that. You know, they right. might say they want to work with you, but, you know, and they blow smoke. But the reality of it is, if you're actually willing to work with me, mm-hmm. have some skin in the game.
Right.
Be in it. Be involved. You know, don't just say it with your words. Mm-hmm. Act on it.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's kind of comical how that, even though we might want it because it might look beautiful, mm-hmm. for some reason, those people are cut out of our lives because you just can't get to that meeting, or you can't get to
right.
that, you know, signing that contract or something. Do you guys experience that? And you wonder, why is there it's so much of an effort?
Well, yeah. I do, definitely. And it's almost like there's a roadblock mm-hmm. And it's just not happening. And the other thing that sometimes happens is, like, sometimes things don't get followed up on, for example,
right.
Or you have this has happened to me, have a meeting arranged. You're very excited about this great meeting that you're having. You're sitting at Starbucks and you get stood up.
Yes.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Sorry.
That happens here way too yeah. often. Way wow. too often. Yeah. Both Bill and I have had the exact same experience. Tell me not, right?
Me too.
Yes, we you have. Know? Yes.
And it's crazy. I'll give you guys the funniest example. Just the other day, I was telling Bill, I had like a really, really full morning. I had back-to-back meetings. And I was, you know, and me, I'm very, very on it. You know, right. so when if I have a meeting with you, I'm 5-10 minutes early and I'm prepared and I'm ready to go. Right. That morning was like the epitome of Murphy's Law. All right. Every single person that I had scheduled from 8:30 in the morning till mm-hmm. noon had either canceled or rescheduled or something. The funniest one, though, was for one of my businesses. I had to do some high level insurance policies. So I went to see an insurance broker who had scheduled me for 11 a.m. I was there at 10:51. I get out of the car. I'm ready with my laptop. I'm excited about the meeting. At 10:55, I get a phone call. Oh, hey, Isa, I'm so sorry. I'm not at the office. I had an emergency. Can we reschedule? And I'm like, well, I'm outside your building. Can you please send me someone that I can speak to? Ends up sending me someone. That person, completely incompetent, you know, and then takes my information. And I went about my day. I had other things to do. I didn't end up getting a call back regarding the main reason I was there in the first place mm-hmm. till 6 p.m. Wow. that same day. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. How do you expect to have me as your client?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I'm impressed you got it the same day.
Right?
Right?
I thought it was going to be 24 hours, yeah. 48 hours. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I got to say how I'm amazed I am at how often people will say, I don't have time. I'm just so busy. I'm just so busy. And I feel right. like I'm so busy. It's nails on a scratchboard for me. It's. Yes. I would much rather you just say it's not a priority for me. Okay. Because okay. if a hot date popped up out of nowhere, I have a feeling you would figure out how to make time for that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a priority. And I also wrote down, I feel, and one of my favorite leaders and trainers in my R&F industry, his name is Jim Larson. And he talks about how when people say I'm too busy, or they come up with all the different objections on either the business isn't right for them or the product isn't right for them or whatever it is, what you're really saying is either I don't trust or I don't have faith in the product or the business. I don't believe this is a vehicle to get me to where I want to be, mm-hmm. or I don't believe in myself.
Wow.
Yep.
And that's powerful. Like when you flip that statement and instead of saying I'm too busy, mm-hmm. say I don't believe in myself, or I don't believe in this opportunity, or I don't believe in whatever's in front of me. Okay, now I've got something to work with. Either we do you want to have a conversation about it, or mm-hmm. I simply respect that. I now know where we stand. But let's really just be authentic and honest and transparent.
I
so
like
that.
We know
where to go.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we're honest with ourselves, so for example, time management. When I sit down with my calendar, so one of my business mentors, here's what she says as far as time management. So I sit down every week, sometimes multiple times during my week, and I write out my whole schedule. And so I write in things like sales calls. That's the hardest thing for me to do is make sales calls. And then I'll write in weekly budget, you know, business budget. There's also a time to sit down with my wife to go over the personal budget, right? So I do all these things. Nice. So, but my business mentor says, and now you're accountable to do those things. So from 8 to 10 on Monday mornings, I'm making my sales calls. Mm-hmm. If I'm not making those sales calls, why didn't I do it? I set aside the time. Why didn't I do it? What's stopping me? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's fear. You know, then I've got something to take a look at, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it's those intentions. So we do have the time. It's just being intentional with our time and how to manage it.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Intentional. I think that's one thing I'm hearing around here is that you guys are all intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Does that help you to get to where you are right now to be successful?
I think so. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we all have that thing in common where we're driven, but we're also continuously reflecting and self-aware.
I love that.
You know, Bill touched on how he does it, right? Yeah. I personally do it a little different, but mm-hmm. it's the same foundational basis, right? So if you are actively trying to improve yourself, mm-hmm. you're always going to get better. There's no way that you can be trying to improve yourself and then go in reverse.
Right.
You know, like a few months back, I downloaded the Rosetta Stone program because I wanted to add Spanish as my sixth language. Mm-hmm. Right. I started it the first few weeks. I was making time for it and everything else. And then things got busy at work. I put it to the side. Haven't forgotten that it's there. Mm-hmm. I paid for it already. Believe me, I'm going to use it. But the truth of the matter is other things came up that were more important. So like Bill was just describing, mm-hmm. it's super critical to address what's important in the now.
Okay.
And then what's important for the next week, the next month, the next year. Mm-hmm. You have to have clear, distinct goals. You mm-hmm. can say, I want to be a billionaire next year. Fine. That's a great, great goal to have. How are you getting there? You know, what's day one going to be? Day two, day three, day 360? Absolutely. You know, how are you getting there? You know, and that's the part that a lot of people, you know, shy away from.
Right.
You know, like I personally have this debate with my parents all the time. You know, I love them to death. I know they love me to death. But, you know, their dream for me was the American dream. I was supposed to be a doctor. You know, I was a chem major in school, did really well. And through life's adversities, that didn't happen.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that I can't still excel. Right. So when I talk to them about my approach to business and how I want to do things, to them, it's so alien that it doesn't make sense, you know, and we have shouting matches sometimes. My dad and I, we butt heads like this, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when I've proven, Dad, here's my plan. Here's what I've done. Here's how I'm executing. I'm on this portion. I'm 10% of the way. On this project, I'm 20% of the way. Mm-hmm. And then they start to understand it. You know, and I think that ties into how Bill was describing he does it. You know, you're constantly self-reflecting, absorbing, and improving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's so critical to hold oneself accountable. And so to add a lens of psychology here, when I think about that, there's so often people don't meet their goals, and it's easier and it's more convenient and it's more comfortable, less anxiety provoking to blame something in the external environment.
Bingo.
I'm too busy. I didn't have the opportunities. Right. I didn't get the time. I was too busy with work. There were too many demands. There's always something. Mm-hmm. I choose to live my life as I am in control of 100% of the things that happen in my life. Every single decision I made led to what came of it. On the months when I'm maybe going through a big life thing or I'm stressed, I'm overwhelmed, somebody I care about, there's like a relationship thing going on. Mm-hmm. And those months, my business shows it. Maybe my numbers aren't as high. Maybe I didn't hit my goal. Maybe that's 100% on me because I'm fully aware that I woke up every single day and made a choice. You know what? My head's not in it, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I give myself permission to experience that, but then I don't blame anyone but myself at the end of that month. Then on the months when I am on fire, I am going out, I'm going to events, I'm traveling, I'm doing all the things that I like to do, and I'm in my happy place, and I hit those goals, and in fact, I blow them out of the water. And that, again, was 100% on me, every single thing. There was a meme, I love memes, came across Facebook the other day, and it said, I am responsible for 100% of the things I say. Wow. I am not responsible for how you interpret it. And that was powerful. And I think it's the same for what I say and what I do.
Yeah.
And the last one I wanted to make too is people become discouraged when they keep moving the finish line without appropriately rewarding themselves along the way. And a reward doesn't have to be this big expensive reward where you just undid all the wonderful progress you made. But what we do is we just keep trudging along. We don't reward ourselves. We hit our goal and then we're on to the next goal and we didn't celebrate. You just hit your goal. You just move right past it and you forgot that you just hit an incredible achievement. Wow. Recognize that achievement before you just push past it and set the next goal.
Yeah. Right. So I hate to do this because I am having such a good time, but we're closing to, we're towards the end. But I'd like to start with Bill. If you can tell us again what your information is, your company, and how we can get in contact with you.
Oh, sure. So company name is Whitmire Holdings. And the best way to get a hold of me is you can call me 602-820-0664. My email is BillWhitmire@trythecoffee.com. Or my website is BillWhitmire.trythecoffee.com. You can find out all about me.
Yes, I have to go and try the coffee.
Great.
How can we get a hold of you, Alicia?
Sure. So Alicia Nottaman, my name is spelled E-L-I-C-I-A. I'm actually on Facebook. I have a business page there with my skincare world, but it's so much more than just skincare products or the business. It's also, I do the motivational videos. It's all about self-improvement and self-development. So please follow me there. I will go live. You'll get notifications when I go live. And that is the number 4ANEWYOU. So 4ANEWYOU. You can certainly also send me an email, and that's ELICIAN@gmail.com. And I believe you'll have all of that information. And then finally, I have a website that folks can go and peruse. They can take my skincare quiz if interested. We have products to help get rid of wrinkles, sun damage, discoloration, sensitive skin issues. Our eyelash products, amazing. It naturally enhances longer, darker, fuller looking lashes, which is a lot of fun.
It is.
But that's the number 4ANEWYOU, the number 2.com. And so I would love to just kind of help. One of the nonprofits I'm actually looking for possibly getting involved in the community, in case any of the listeners happen to know of one, is I want to look to giving back in some fashion with an organization in town that works with the elderly. And specifically, I'm looking to become a part of a board and really help to share resources and share the expertise I've developed now over the last 10 years. So if anyone knows of anything, please feel free to reach out to me.
Love it.
Cool. And I guess for me, it's simple and straightforward. Full name is Isa Israel again. And the name of the company is U.S. Financial Alliance, LLC. You can look us up on our website, usfinancialalliance.com. On the website, we have a variety of copious amounts of information for all the different services that we do. We're always looking to help as many clients as we can. Obviously, we're also looking to empower individuals that can be referral partners and affiliates and be part of the group so that we can spread that message even wider. My direct way to reach me, this is the longest time that my cell phone has not been attached to my face. So this would be the best way. So I'll give you guys my personal cell phone and also my office line, which is personal cell phone is still a New York number, 347-543-5333. Tried to make it as easy as possible for you to remember. My office line is 480-428-0001. My email is first initial of my name, Israel, ISRAEL@USFinancialAlliance.com. If you have general questions, you can reach us at our service@USFinancialAlliance.com email. And there you'll get a prompt response right away, you know, so that you can have your questions answered. And also you can book an appointment through the website, so you can reach out to us that way. And soon coming is we just started building out our LinkedIn and our Facebook and all our social media pages. So those are going to be coming in the next few weeks. And we'd love to hear from you.
Oh, great. And we've been brought to you by Divinity Beauty Bar down in Tucson, Arizona. That's at 3402 East Broadway. And if you want to look beautiful, feel beautiful, just come on down. We can give you a weave, a wig, a color, a cut, anything you like. Beautiful nails, too, I'm just saying. I'm wearing some today. And also want to give a shout out to the Tucson Lions Breakfast Club. They're going to be at the 4th Avenue Street Fair this weekend selling beer. Stop on by and have a beer. And also we'll be doing the golf tournament, and just go online and see them at Tucson Breakfast Club www.whitmerehelp.org. And you can find out a little more about them because they're all about raising money for the children's camps and camp abilities is what it is. Thank you and well, and just enjoy your weekend. And want to thank Issa again, Alicia and Bill. You guys have been a great inspiration to me and probably everyone in the room. I see Karen shaking her head, and we also have Catherine shaking her head. So good stuff, good conversation, good food for the mind and body and soul.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.